heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
It's that week. Football is here. This is Monday, September the 6th. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I had to dig deep into my pockets for this episode to get one of the guests because as you see, Matt, that's who is there. But I had to dig deep into my pockets, guys. This podcast is hanging on by a thread. I'm going to have to start a Kickstarter after this because I also have trust fund benefactor Jared Silberkleit in here with me. Fellas, how are we doing? Are we ready to talk some NFC football?
Oh, yeah, we're ready. I'm excited, and it's always a pleasure to be on the podcast, talk some football. It's always a fun time. Happy to be talking to Jared, and happy to be talking to you, of course, Griff. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. When I heard you were doing an NFC prediction show, I just had to come on to give the trust fund's extensive hot take on why the New York Football Giants will become the first team to go 17-0 in the regular season and 20-0 overall. And that, my friends, is trust fund approved.
That, my friends, is salt in my wound. But anyway,
I had to.
I'm the Pats fan here. I'm the guy who's not I'm not really into any NFC teams. I'm in the AFC, but you know what? I'm the host, so I like to talk about, because that's the thing I always like about doing this show, is that I get to get perspectives on other people's teams. And Matt, we'll save the NFC South for later, but I think we should start with the NFC East because it's honestly one of the more intriguing divisions this year, because I feel like with the NFC East, and I feel like Jared can touch upon this, no one exactly knows what we're going to get.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Last year was... You know, as the season was going along, people thought that it was one of the worst years, one of the worst single years for a division in recent, if not all time, NFL history. I do think a lot of that was caused by injuries. I mean, you had Dak Prescott and the entire Cowboys offensive line going down. You had Saquon Barkley going down for the Giants. The Eagles were just falling to pieces all over the place. And that really, that opened the door for Washington to ultimately steal the division at 7-9 and get into the playoffs. But I do think with, first of all, I would say every team, including maybe even Philly, has gotten somewhat better in the offseason. And they will be returning players from injuries. And from a leadership standpoint, I think that particularly the Giants and Washington have the right coaches in place. So I definitely think that this division is going to be a lot more competitive. I think that you're definitely going to see a winning record from the winner, and there might be multiple winners. Multiple playoff teams might be a reach, but there's going to be some good football coming out of this division. It could be a situation where they cannibalize each other and nobody really has a great runaway record, but I definitely think that whoever wins this division, people are going to look at them and say, yeah, that's a good team and they earned it.
Yeah, I could see that. My thing with the NFC East is, I mean, sorry to burst your bubble here, but I feel like it's just a two-team race between the Redskins and the Cowboys. The Cowboys, their offense was on a tear last season before Dak got hurt, and part of it was because the defense was so trash. I think the defense will be marginally better, especially since they added Micah Parsons, who I'm hearing rave reviews about so far, but sometimes these linebackers take a year or so to adjust. Mm-hmm. You see Isaiah Simmons on the Cardinals. He didn't quite just like go crazy his first year. I mean, he was good, but he wasn't like amazing or anything, but I think the defense is still going to be a problem for the Cowboys. But as long as Dak's there, he should be able to keep them afloat. But speaking from experience, I know what it's like to play with a god-awful defense but have a great quarterback. And that can only get you so far. So I don't know about the Cowboys until I actually see how good their defense is. If it can just be like the 20th best defense in the league, I think they could win the division. But the Redskins, I think, will also be really good. The defense will keep them afloat. It's just a matter of fact of what Fitzpatrick's going to do. This man has that gunslinger mentality. He just goes out there and he'll have a good game here, and then a bad game the next day. I think there's a stat out there that I heard that he just doesn't have like four really, really good games in a row. It's just always a couple games good, and then he has a bad game here. So if the Redskins can kind of ride that wave and just have some of those bad games come against like really good teams and get that out of the way, that'll be good for them. But I think their defense is going to keep them afloat, and they'll definitely it'll definitely be a contention. But if I had to pick a winner, it'd probably be the Cowboys.
I'm picking the football team to win this division just because of defense. I still have trust issues with the Cowboys because we don't really know. Like, I think Zeke is the biggest question mark, and along with this defense, obviously, they're running a new defense. They're going to have that Seattle scheme defense under Dan Quinn. I know that's kind of, like, overused now because we have so many people that have come from that branch, that tree branch, like Gus Bradley in Vegas, Joel Woods up in Seattle, Robert Saleh even. I know he likes to add his little sprinkles here and there being different, but he did come from that tree. Dak Prescott's injury, that's a huge question mark for me. Not just the ankle, but the rotator cuff too, because I know obviously more of a baseball or a shoulder, not a rotator cuff. But Dallas, for me, I think they're gonna have. I think Dallas is gonna have those moments where, you know, where it, like that. Well, I'm getting my words mixed up. I think they, if they get into too many shootouts, that's a concern because they'll be one of those teams where it's like, hey, look, you look great for the regular season, but once the playoffs kick in, you got to learn how to play defense because the way they look right now, and Matt, you know about this because you're kind of in that area. I know you're an SEC fan, but they have a Big 12 team where it's like that explosive offense, but that defense that's kind of like suspect where, hey, they can either shut you down or they're going to allow 40 points a game. And then moving on to Washington, like, I think as long as Fitzpatrick can play okay to decent, I feel like they'll like let the defense do a lot of work. Like, you know, win a lot of those like 20-17 games. So if you're a betting man, which I'm going to start more endorsing this year, responsibly, of course, take a lot of the unders if you're betting the football team. And with Jared's Giants, my only point mark is more than anything, I want to see how Daniel Jones, like if he can take that true third year leap, you know, where it's like we saw Josh Allen do it last year. No, I'm not saying Daniel Jones has to be a MVP caliber quarterback, but I think there's a lot of those like moments where, you know, he doesn't blow the game or he doesn't make a mistake under pressure, kind of like what we've seen in years past. Like, even a prime example last year was the infamous fall against the Eagles on Thursday Night Football. Or even a lot of people don't remember this, or if they have to have their memory log, but you guys almost beat the Bucs last year. That's on Monday Night Football. That's just something of note because I remember going into that game.
Due to a questionable call in the end zone. And then it's funny you mentioned the Eagles game because here is my problem with people's – not you guys. Now, most the experts' hot takes on the Giants. Daniel Jones sucks. Daniel Jones blows football games. Daniel Jones isn't the guy. And they will point to a game like the Eagles game and point to him tripping over his 2 feet and say, oh, the Giants lost. And look what numbskull did when he had an easy touchdown. Well, guess what? The Giants scored a touchdown a few plays after that. And the reason they lost the game is because Jones lofted up an easy ball to Evan Ingram, who had separation, and it bounced off his hand. That's why the Giants didn't win the NFC East last year. It could be boiled down to that one play. And there were several other plays like that where Evan Ingram was the Giants' lead receiver. He was put in a position to be the Giants' number one overall receiver last year. So he was the guy that Jones was targeting on a lot of those game-changing make-or-break moments. And he quite literally dropped the ball on numerous occasions. And now he's going to be like the fifth or sixth most depended on guy in this offense with the weapons that they've added. And I know that, you know, guys were banged up in the preseason, but it sounds like they're all going to be ready to go for week one, except for Kyle Rudolph with the foot injury. But it's going to be a completely different cast of characters for Jones to throw the ball to this year.
Exactly. Yep. There's going to be more ball distribution.
Yeah, that was the thing. Oh, I'm sorry. And that was the thing with Daniel Jones going into it. I feel like this is his season similar to what Drew Lock had last season, where they went out and got all these people. They got Kenny Golladay. They drafted Kadarius Toney in the first round, which might be a little bit questionable for quite a few people, which I'm not going to really get into that. But, I mean, they're trying to supplement him with enough weapons where they can't really be like, well, you don't have enough out there where you can't be blaming it on your weapon supply. So it could end up like that, where it's just like, oh, he actually has to show up with what he has out there. And that's definitely the question mark for him. And for me, looking at him as well, I want to see him put up good numbers with this team, especially with Saquon healthy. That's going to be a huge thing, because Saquon, when he's healthy, he's one of the best running backs in the league, especially talent-wise. This guy's amazing. It's just something I have to see. I have to see Daniel Jones do it, and I'll definitely be interested in hearing Griff's and Big Rat's takes when they watch him on primetime.
Yeah, and to add on to that, you know, I think that the microscope was really dialed in on Daniel Jones last year because Saquon missed the entire season. And you have to understand that, like, I'll come right out and say it. If Saquon is hurt or not performing up to his potential, it is going to be impossible for the Giants to be a good to great team this year. They could maybe be an okay to decent team if that happens, but they are not going to be a real top level threat if he's not playing his best football, because this entire offense is built to run through him. Their success this season and how far they go is going to hinge on the offensive line continuing to develop, which they were last season. Once Joe Judge took more of a hands-on approach with that group mid-season after he fired Mark Colombo, the offensive line started playing a lot better, and Andrew Thomas has looked a lot better in preseason as well this year. And if Barkley is healthy at full strength, performing up to his potential, he's touching the ball 20 plus times a game. And then that's where Jones is able to slide back into that game manager type role. He really, if the Giants are playing their ideal game script, he should not be throwing the ball more than 20-ish times, you know, kind of similar to Lamar Jackson over in Baltimore, where he's not too overexposed if they're playing their game. So their success this year, I think, is going to hinge on that. I guess I'll give my prediction while I'm on this tangent. I think that the Giants are going to take a few weeks, a couple months, I should say, to really get their footing. But I like the way their schedule lines up for them down the stretch. And the Cowboys in particular have a pretty brutal stretch to end the season with a lot of divisional games, including a stretch where they play three straight road games. So I think it's going to be a photo finish for the East like last year, but a more respectable one. And I do think that the Giants are going to ultimately coalesce. I see kind of similar to 2016, where they had a slow start but found their footing. And I think that they're ultimately going to win this division with a record of about 10-7.
You know what? That's my ceiling for the New York Giants. I can see them finishing somewhere between like that 7-10 mark to that 10-7 mark. Where, you know what? If Saquon plays like an All-Pro MVP Offensive Player of the Year, if Daniel Jones takes that stride, the offensive line is another big subject, because let's not forget that Mark Colombo tried to fight Joe Judge, and then Joe Judge basically told him to fuck off. My one concern with Washington just going ahead, their last six games go Cowboys, Eagles, Cowboys, Eagles, Giants. The fact that you have got you have five divisional games to finish off the year.
Yeah, like Washington as well.
No, that's Washington.
Yep, yeah, Washington, yep.
Yeah, you guys, I'm just looking up yours, have your last five are Chargers, Cowboys, Eagles, Bears, football team. So we'll see where the Bears are at that time, but you guys are pretty – I like the way your schedule is more balanced. Like Washington just from basically week 14 onward, it's purely divisional, and that can make or break your season. Other news, just because you brought up Baltimore, one thing I wanted to report on is that Mark Andrews has agreed to an extension with the Ravens, 4 years, $56 million at $14 million annual per year, meaning he'll make more money than any other tight end in the league over the next four seasons. So just something of note. And also, too, it appears that, and we'll talk about their division in a bit, but the Saints are probably going to sign Desmond Trufant to start the year. Just some, mm-hmm. just some news I wanted to break.
All right.
But no, the Giants for me, like obviously I have a bit of a, like I said before, salt in the wound with them, obviously, because it cost me pain. But you know, one Giant player I'm kind of looking at to see if they can have a breakout year is Sterling Shepard, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, Sterling's going to be an interesting one. I mean, I think that it's going to be He's going to have to fight for snaps, I think, with Tony and Ingram as well. Because I think that really the way their offense is going to be structured, it favors the two tight end set with Rudolph being able to function as that reliable blocker. That kind of puts Ingram, Sterling, and Tony on that slot rotation. So they're just going to have to fight each other for snaps. Then with Galladay and Slayton working the outside. Now that they have that certified number one receiver, you know, that's really going to put the pressure on everybody else to perform and show why they belong on the field. I do think that Jason Garrett's offense, if he's able to fully open up the play, does open up some really intriguing play possibilities for Shepard, because I think that he's just going to be so much more effective on those jet sweeps than when they tried it with Ingram, and it just laughably failed miserably last year. So I like Sterling too. We just got to see how well Tony plays and if he squeezes him out for snaps.
Before Matt, you get in, I just have a bit of a, I don't know if this is a hot take or controversial or not, but I think regardless how this year goes, Gettleman, I don't think will be leaving at the end of the year. Because look, a very sneaky move he made is you guys have two first-round picks next year. So we'll see where that goes. But that's just something to keep a note going forward. I know I love talking draft too, but man, this is season. We'll talk the draft in six months yeah. Now. But that's just something of note to make the scene where it's like, hey, remember, these guys have picks where that Bears pick could be in the teens for all we know.
Could be in the teens or could be top 10. I mean, we'll talk about the North in a bit, but I think that the Bears could be facing a pretty miserable 21, just my opinion. And I think that, you know, so worst case scenario for both teams, I suppose, the Giants could be in a position where if there's somebody they need to get at number one, they could possibly make it happen next year. Of course, everybody should be praying that that's not the case and that Daniel Jones does take a leap forward. But this is a make or break year for him. You know, I mean, it's not to make any excuses for him. I think that like this is the year where he finally has all of the opportunity that he needs. And we'll see if it delivers or not. But if it doesn't, they have a backup plan.
Exactly.
And if I had to predict the order of the divisional finish, I'm going to go New York, Washington, Dallas, Philly. I think Philly's going to be far out of the race.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I'm worried about Philly because I'm not a huge Jalen Hurts guy. I mean, yes, Jalen Hurts and Miles Sanders absolutely tore up my Saints when we played them last season. That was one of those trap games that we ended up losing when Taysom Hill was the starter. So I just don't know. I just don't know how I feel about Jalen Hurts. I don't know how his consistency will keep up. And they traded for Gardner Minshew, who I think could low-key push him for the job because, yes. I mean, Gardner, when he was with the Jags, he put up numbers with a terrible surrounding system just all around. I mean, the offense had some playmakers here and there, but for the most part, I mean, he was thrown a bad hand with a bad team after they pretty much went to the AFC championship and everything kind of just crumbled from there, and he was just on a crumbling ship. And now that he's on a team where he can maybe push someone to be the starter, I think it could be possible because, I mean, Gardner Minshew, some people give him some slack, but, I mean, look, he put up some numbers when he's with the Jags, and he's going to push Jalen Hurts for that job at some point during the season.
With me, I just feel like Eagles fans, I've seen Eagles fans thinking they're going to be 10-7 team. Like, I think their best case scenario is 6 wins. Just, if you're an Eagles fan, and I know Markeem was supposed to be part of this podcast, but he had something come up. This year for Eagles fans, I think a lot of Eagles fans will admit it. I think that they know that deep down it's going to be not a bad season, but there's going to be hiccups and there's going to be moments where you realize, hey, this just isn't our year. Like we don't know what the Nick Sirianni offense is truly going to look like. I do like Shane Steichen there, but at the same time, so you don't know. And they're still an aging team, but I still think that Devontae Smith is going to have a good year. It's just a big who's at quarterback. But if I'm an Eagles fan, this is one of those years where, like the Jets, you're looking ahead to 22 and beyond.
I totally agree with that. Personally, I was getting Adam Gase vibes during Nick Sirianni's intro press conference. I don't have any confidence in him as the head coach of this team. He came across as clueless. He's a first-time head coach. I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains. It's a roster in repair. There are this team. I mean, it seems like every single year, half the team gets hurt, particularly on the offensive line. They always seem to struggle in that front. And then, like, you know, Darius Slay, they got him last year and he was freaking terrible. Devonta Smith, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some flashy plays from him. But yeah, I don't really trust the quarterback situation. I think that Minshew is going to push him. I think that you're going to see, it would not surprise me at all to see them alternating throughout the season. Like, it's just going to depend on who looks good in practice on a certain week. But I think that both of them have potential, but I just don't, I think that they're both kind of at that same level of like, all right, well, maybe we can kind of work with this. And then some weeks it's going to be the other guy's week, that kind of thing. And yeah, I just think they play in a more competitive division that has, you know, much more physical defenses than they do, better offensive lines than they do, and more importantly, better head coaching than they do. So bottom of the barrel.
I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. But anyway, you know, first off, we started off with Jared's division just because it's very intriguing. But moving on to the NFC South right now, and Matt, before we talk about your guys, I think we're all in favor of who's going to win this division this year. I think there, I don't think there's any questioning about it, that it's going to be the Atlanta Falcons.
Yes. Yes, sir. Kyle Pitts, baby. That's funny. God, we're going to look stupid if that happens.
I'm just kidding, folks. I think we're all in agreement that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to win this division.
Unfortunately.
Maybe closer than you think.
That's the thing. I feel like everyone thinks Tampa is going to be like this 16-1 like juggernaut powerhouse, but I honestly can see them. I think they're going to have moments last year. Like, remember the Bears game, how there was that meme where Brady was doing the three, but then it was actually the fourth down, and that ended up, that's when they lost the game. I wouldn't be shocked if you saw another moment against a weaker team this year where they just catch people off guard. Because one thing of note last year, look at the Kansas City Chiefs from last year. They were 14-2, but they almost lost to the Raiders. They lost to the Raiders once. They almost lost them twice. They almost lost the Broncos, the Chargers, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Saints. There was a lot of games where the Chiefs actually, for those folks at home who gamble, they were 7-9 against the spread. Jacksonville had the exact same spread record. So I honestly don't think Tampa's going to be this team where they come in, you know, every week they just basically come in, whoop ass, and leave. Or to quote Stone Cold Steve Austin, arrive, raise hell, and leave. I think you're going to see a lot of closer games with these teams. Like, one of my hot takes for this Thursday's game is, I think they're going to beat the Dallas Cowboys, but I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to cover that 7-point spread.
I think the Bucs will win that game by multiple scores, but I do agree with your overall take on the team this year. Here's the thing. The Bucs are a very well-rounded team, but yeah, when you look at a lot of their games last year, particularly the ones against better competition, they didn't necessarily blow a lot of teams out of the water. And it's not like, see, Tom Brady, yeah, he had great numbers last year. I mean, to do what he's doing right now in his mid-40s is really impressive. But we have to keep in mind that for much of the season, his accuracy with the deep ball was questionable at best, right? I mean, they're playing their game, and he's able to – first of all, their defense was very turnover-happy and cut the field in half a lot. And then – you look at those playoff wins against the Saints, against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. It's like the guy's getting to work with short fields, completing a lot of low-risk passes. And his stats were more inflated by some of those blowouts against bad teams like the Lions. And with his age, the drop-off could come at any moment. That's why I was actually a little hesitant to take Godwin in the fourth round of one of my drafts, just because of thinking, we're dealing with a mid-40s quarterback here. Like we saw with Peyton Manning, it came out of freaking nowhere, right? So, and Roethlisberger, I think the bottom's about to fall out any seconds. So got to keep that in mind. I think there's still just too much talent to deny them the division crown, but it could be a photo finish with New Orleans. I think with both of them, maybe in that 11 win range, 11, 12, 12 being the ceiling. I think that's the ceiling for this team.
I'll get to the Saints here in a little bit because I'm probably going to rant on them for a while.
Matt's got a lot of problems with you people, and now you're going to hear about them.
as far as the Bucs go, I think this is going to be your Tom Brady might honestly win MVP. I'm not lying here because if you look at Bruce Arians, every year that he has a quarterback in his first year, they throw more interceptions than normal and they don't perform as well. The second season is normally when things get a little bit better. And plus, this team has so many offensive weapons. They're so deep across the board on defense as well, which may be the one thing that kind of hurts him in his MVP conversations. The defense might play so well that he doesn't have to put up numbers. And the fact of it is they got hot towards the end of the year, and I think they're going to maintain that because that's just how it works with Brady and how it works with all these teams. It took a minute to gel together because they're all new. They're under Brady's system, or pretty much Brady's system at this point, because I feel like towards the beginning of the year, they're just mainly going under Bruce Arians. And then as Tom got more comfortable, they switched over to having Tom run it more or less. My other main thing with the Bucks is the fact that, I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to lose three games. That's what I got them going. Probably losing three to four games is around the threshold that I have them with this season.
I just want to jump in quickly. Like, when I say, like, oh, I think the Bucs are going to be this, I'm just saying that because as a Patriots fan, I know a lot about this, where we have the year where we win the Super Bowl, you know, we look awesome towards the end of the year, but then every year we do, expectations kind of, like, don't pan out. That's why I'm only saying what I'm saying. I'm not saying it because, like, oh, I'm a salty Pats fan and hates Tom. No, I love Tom. I wish nothing but the best for him. But my only thing is that I'm just saying here, I'm not expecting the Bucs to go out there and, you know, blow the doors off everyone every week. I'm expecting them to be a good team. I think 12 to 14 wins is what they're going to ultimately end up doing, like 12-5 or 14-3. But when you look at it, though, I feel like they're going to be challenged a lot this season too, where teams, you know what, are going to put them, have the Bucs circled on the calendar, week four in particular, for obvious reasons.
That's true. Yeah. And I remembered an analogy I was going to make earlier. It left my mind. We remember when Peyton Manning went to the Broncos. It took them a little while to get going. Then the year after, Peyton Manning was lighting up the record books. I think it's going to be similar to that.
And then he got his ass kicked in the Super Bowl in MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of challenging games on the Bucs schedule. Also, I have to mention this. I think that the NFC South, the rest of that division, is a little underrated. I think that the Falcons and the Panthers are both going to surprise people. It's funny, we were ragging on Atlanta to open this video, but or this podcast, but I actually could see, because Atlanta's always been a back and forth team, and I didn't really see much of a drop off from Matt Ryan last year. And the fact that, you know, losing Julio Jones, but replacing him with potentially a generational offensive prospect in Kyle Pitts to complement Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage. I think that that team's always a threat to score. And I mean, they should have beaten Dallas last year. There's a couple other big leads that they blew as well. I think that they were a lot better than 4-12, and they always seem to be back and forth in that regard. You've got the Panthers, who they've got a good coach. I like Rule. I like what they're building over there in terms of defense. I know a lot of people are not confident in Darnold, but they didn't have McCaffrey for a lot of last season, and they have a good group of receivers despite losing Curtis Samuel. I think that, you know, are they necessarily going to be playoff teams? No, but I do think that we could see a cannibalization scenario that a lot of people are not expecting, and I think that that's going to dilute everybody's record. It wouldn't surprise me if nobody in this division comes out with a bye.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
The Carolina, and this is my hot take, the Carolina Panthers are my team to, like, have that breakout where, you know what, at the end of this season, you're saying they're going to be good. I expect Darnold to have a career year. Now, I know that's not saying a lot, but I feel like with
Dude,
Joe
look
Brady.
At who he's working with. Yeah.
He goes from Adam Gates to Joe Brady. That's like going from a beat up old 1984 Toyota to a freaking, like, not like a Ferrari when it comes to offensive football minds. Yeah. Like, we saw what Joe Brady did with Joe Burrow, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah, you got a better coordinator, better head coach, McCaffrey, like, you know, top five player in the league, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore. Like, this is completely different than when he had to work with the new the quarterback cesspool. Like, they couldn't make anyone good.
Like, even too, Terrace Marshall from LSU is a receiver I'm excited they'll see. I think Brian Burns and Jeremy Chin, two very underrated defenders in this
league. Yes. Yeah.
Like, I'm saying, like, I think the Panthers, like, my record for them is, like, I think, like, the same as the Eagles, like a little bit better. Probably I'm going to say like a 6-11 or a 7-10. But I think there's a couple games on their schedule that they're going to catch some teams off guard. Like they're going to win a game or like you know how we were talking about it with the NFC, like I said with the Bucks, Jared, where the Monday Night Football game last year with the Giants, where there's going to be a game where I feel like where the Panthers are an 11 or a 12 point underdog, but they lose by 3, so they cover. Like there's going to be a couple moments like that with the Panthers this year. I feel like where you lose with dignity.
Yeah, I have that Panthers Giants game circled as the what the fuck? How the fuck did we fucking lose this game of the year? Where like you know what I mean? And I feel like there's going to be moments like that when they face some other teams as well. I could see like 8-9 from them, honestly.
Just my thing with the Falcons is with Matt Ryan. I feel like if Matt Ryan plays like MVP Matt Ryan from 2016, they can get there. But at the same time, we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see Arthur Smith. It's just their defense is the concern for me. They don't really have that good of a defense, so I still feel like it's going to be an electric offense. But they're going to be in some. I feel like they could be in some shootouts this year, and that. I feel like this Philly, their matchup with Philadelphia week one is going to be a true indicator for both teams on where they're going to go. I know it's a very early thing to say, but I feel like that game's going to, that's what that game represents for me.
I would agree with that. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, I'm sorry. As far as the other two teams of the division, besides the Bucks and my Saints, of course, I think the Panthers, they're going to have troubles. Their offensive line is not good at all. We all remember the quote where Sam Darnold thought he was seeing ghosts. He's going to be thinking that again this year. And granted, his weapons are going to be better. So there's probably going to be a lot of dump offs to McCaffrey, a lot of throws to DJ Moore in the slot. They don't really have a capable tight end there. I'm not really big on Dan Arnold or Ian Thomas. So I don't think that's really going to help him as much. But I think there's going to be some pains there. And Joe Brady, he might be able to coach him out of it and keep Sam Darnold decent at best, but honestly think Teddy Bridgewater was probably the better guy, and they got rid of him. And I think there was just that offensive line just couldn't compete up, and it's just going to be a problem for Sam Darnold, even though he has all these weapons, which it's a really good depth chart of weapons. I would be very glad if my team had some of the weapons that they have, but I think it's just going to be an issue for them. So I mean, I feel like they're not really going to – I think there's going to be marginal improvements, not a huge step up. You can see it, but I think they're going to have issues next year when Joe Brady's inevitably probably going to get a head coaching job somewhere, because I think he'll have the offense looking good enough where people can be like, hey, look, this guy, he was getting calls last year. We're going to give him some calls this year, so let's get him in there somewhere. I can't pinpoint a job that I would think he could maybe go to off the top of my head. But
Denver Broncos.
Yeah, the Denver Broncos. That's a really good one, Griff. That's a good one. I could also maybe see. Yeah. I could also maybe see the Bears if they shit the bed this year. There's a couple different teams you could see for sure. And then as far as the Falcons go, look, they're the Falcons. They've had inconsistency issues year over year. Of course, they've changed their head coach. I'm going to miss Dan Quinn. He gave us 28-3 jokes. I will always love that. Second best Super Bowl ever.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll definitely appreciate the Patriots for winning that one. But the loss of Julio Jones, like Jared was saying earlier, it's going to be big. Getting Kyle Pitts should be a big one. There is always questions because some of these tight ends have a hard time adjusting in their first couple years in the NFL. But like he was saying, Kyle Pitts is a generational talent at tight end. And he's going to be lining up all over the place, considering who else they have at wide receiver just outside of Calvin Ridley. Russell Gage looked good in the couple games that Julio Jones didn't play last year. But, I mean, I'm not too big on the guy. So I think it's mainly just going to be the Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts show. Their running game's not going to be very good because, I mean, Mike Davis, he has stability concerns performing, especially over a 17-game span. And I think the Falcons' defense is going to be inconsistent, and I just don't see that these two teams performing too great. I'm not going to say they're going to be like one of the worst teams in the conference or anything, but their ceiling's probably 8 wins, if I'm being honest with both of them, and their floor could be even lower, maybe 4 wins to 5 wins.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that like that's probably, yeah, I mean, I don't think either of these are playoff teams for sure. but probably a little bit. They were in that 4-5 win range last year, so
yeah,
you'd like to think that there would be a step forward there. But your Saints, Matt, I know you've been waiting to unleash.
Okay, go. It's probably gonna be a little long-winded, kind of like how Big Rat was with his Dolphins on your AFC podcast, but neither here nor there. He had some good stuff to say about his Dolphins. So, okay, with the Saints this year, of course, the big thing going into it, and I've never paid this much attention to a Saints camp before, because there's the huge thing of who's going to be the quarterback. Is it going to be Taysom Hill or is it going to be Jameis? A lot of people kept saying Tamis or Jason. It was all crazy stuff. Everybody was mixing up their names. But from the get-go, you could kind of see that, oh, Jameis Winston is having more better practices, but he couldn't string it along where he was having multiple good practices in a row. So it kept the competition honest, and it kept it where Sean Payton kind of said to Taysom, hey, look, I'm going to give you an honest crack at getting the starting job, because he went into this season. He normally has his body meant to play multiple positions, because that's how Taysom works, is he's a multiple positional guy. And that's, I think, also another wrinkle into this, where if he had won the job, you wouldn't have had that guy that can play tight end or slot out wide at wide receiver at some point and block a couple plays. I don't think he's really going to be on special teams as much this year, but yeah, I mean, Jameis, he definitely won the job in that Jaguars game. He was dotting up the Jaguars defense, which, I mean, isn't a huge big thing, but the Jaguars were actually playing like they were actually scheming to play a game, like it was actually a regular season game. I think mainly because it's a new coaching staff and they're trying to get adjusted to everything, so I think that had something to play into it. But Jameis looked fantastic, and that was definitely the night that he won that job. Another thing with the Saints right now that is topical is they just had a hurricane come through, and they are expecting to not be around for the first month of the season or so. That's what the expectation is, and they're practicing out of Dallas. The Green Bay game is going to be in Jacksonville. They definitely did not want to go up to play in Green Bay and give Green Bay an extra home game, so that wasn't going to happen. So I think all this traveling and stuff could hurt them a little bit. Especially when you play a team like the Packers, which is going to be really good. So there's definitely concerns with that part of it. Another part of my concern is with COVID, the salary cap definitely got hurt. And that definitely hurt their plans to keep people. Like, they had to let go of Janoris Jenkins, who was a fantastic second cornerback for us, because it's been a revolving wheel at that corner position outside of Marshawn Lattimore. We went to Ken Crawley, who is now actually with the team right now, and if he was not hurt right now, he'd probably be our starting corner, which he still might play week one, so he's probably going to be the starting corner. It's what it's looking like. And then we went to Giants cornerbacks Eli Apple and then Janoris Jenkins, who Eli Apple, he played good for a little while, then we had to let him go, and then go to Janoris Jenkins, who played really well. So that's definitely going to be something that hurts us. If I would have done things differently, I probably would have cut Latavius Murray, especially seeing how he's been in the preseason, and kept Latavius Murray with that extra cap savings, but that's neither here nor there at this point. We did draft Paulson Adebo to play corner. He could be a good guy there. He showed promise, and it's just going to be a revolving door at that corner position. Defensive tackle is also going to be pretty huge. David Onyemata suspended. Griff's guy to Canada, really good defensive tackle. Yeah, I expected him to have, yeah, I expected him to have a really good season, but with this suspension, it's going to hurt. And I mean, he's so good, you can put him at D end, and he was getting pressures constantly. Granted, it was on the Jacksonville Jaguars thing, where their O-line was terrible looking when they played the Saints. But I think our D-line our defensive ends are really deep. Our defensive tackles are really weak. We had an undrafted free agent from last year, Jalen Dalton. He was scheduled to be the starter, but he got hurt, so it's not looking good there at all. But as a whole, I will say the roster in some spots has been hurt because of the COVID affecting the salary cap and us not being able to keep people, and we had to gut some parts of the depth at the depth chart. For instance, wide receiver is going to be hurt because we had to let go of Emmanuel Sanders. And right now, our biggest guy there is Tre'Quan Smith, who a lot of people are probably like, oh, he's just the guy who comes in and does deep passes every now and then. But I think another wrinkle in that is the fact that over the past 5 years, I would say, five, 4 years, Drew Brees, his arm is obviously diminishing. He was still so amazing with the short passing game and how they executed it. But now the Saints are going to have to keep teams honest with Jameis's arm, which is really good talent. It's just the fact of, can they keep the interceptions down with this guy since going 30 for 30, which, like I said earlier, first year in Bruce Arians' system, I think that hurt him a bit. He also got LASIK eye surgery, which could be a huge factor in that. We don't know how much that'll help, but I think the fact that he's in Sean Payton's offense, he learned from Drew Brees about turning over the ball a little bit less and being more efficient with targets. And just seeing some of the decisions he's made in the preseason where he will actually dunk the ball off into the flats to a running back instead of trying to throw it into double coverage could be good. But yeah, I might have a little bit more to say, but I want to hear what you guys have to say on my Saints.
Jared, the floor is yours.
The Saints have definitely been dealt a bad hand in terms of, with the hurricane situation and, you know, starting with Michael Thomas, kind of gutting the receiver room a little bit. There's definitely been a pullback in terms of skilled players on offense and defense. Matt, I'm glad you touched on the corner situation, which I was actually not fully aware of the entire extent of what they've been dealing with lately. It comes just down to faith in the head coach. You know, I think you guys still have the right leadership, still got a steady hand. I think that this offense is going to have to be a little less explosive than usual. But if Alvin Kamara is really up to the task of putting this team on his back and being everything we know he can be in this league, I think that the Saints are – I don't know if they're going to quite do enough to push Tampa for the division, but I still think that they can sneak into the playoffs. Definitely going to be challenging with depending on how far they wind up being away from home. And there are some challenging games in the middle of their schedule, really strewn throughout, actually. And a lot of it could, depend on how competitive Carolina and Atlanta are this year. If they are still experiencing, growing pains and, if their deficiencies really come to light and those become easy wins for New Orleans, that's going to greatly improve their playoff chances. I think that this team will ultimately finish in maybe about 10 wins. It's definitely going to be challenging. I don't see them winning a lot of games by multiple scores, but we have to, again, still keep in mind that despite their drawbacks, despite all the adversity they've been dealing with, they still have one of the best coaches in the league. They still have one of the best players in the league. And if they're playing their game and Alvin Kamara is that bell cow, I think that's going to be enough to win the majority of their games. Maybe not enough for them to be a great team, but a pretty good team.
I'm going to go because Jared, I don't know if you know this or not, my father and sister actually are Saints fans. So I kind of have a quasi fan of the team. So my two cents is this, because I feel like if I say the wrong thing, my dad will smack me in the head. But my big thing with the Saints this year is obviously, look, the burden's obviously quarterback. I honestly think Jameis Winston's going to surprise a lot of people. Obviously, the Michael Thomas thing does hinder things. And I know a lot of people call Taysom Hill like a fantasy pain in the ass, because when you need those AK 41 touchdowns, which I have them on two rosters this year, and I'm expecting a big year out of them, you want them to score, but you don't – they go to Taysom. I feel like Sean has the perfect thing. I feel like the whole rumor was because I feel like a lot of people thought that Taysom was like, this puppet that Sean invented, where it's like he wants this to work because it's his guy. Like Taysom is like a monster that he created in a factory, like a Frankenstein-ish. That's how I feel, like the way that Sean Payton views Sean Payton views Taysom. But Jameis is the logical choice. I think this team is going to surprise some people. I have them making the playoffs. I think they're going to be I think 9-8 to 11-5. I think that's where they're going to be. I think there's going to be a couple games where, hey, we should have won, but maybe you lost, or a couple of mistakes here and there. Kind of what happened in the divisional game. I could see similar instances to that happening. But all in all, I'm not going to write this team off. The only thing I'm going to say is look, as long as they lose week three in Gillette Stadium, apart from that, we'll see how the rest of the year goes. Besides that, I'll be kind of rooting for you guys, because I know the Saints are always that underdog. But with the hurricane stuff, obviously we're out here hoping the best for everybody that listens to this from the state of Louisiana. But the way that the schedule is broken up to where you guys open week one against Green Bay, obviously the game's in Duval County, now in Jacksonville. But week two and three are on the road in Carolina and obviously in New England. But I feel like week four against the Giants is a game where you guys could return home. Like, that's the big homecoming, which that's a matchup here for you two. But all in all, I feel like the Saints are going to have a pretty decent year. Like, you guys still have Cam Jordan. Pete Warner from Ohio State's a player I'm fascinated to look at.
I'll get into that.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated to see how he's looked. I haven't seen too much in the Saints camp stuff. How is I want to pick your brain, too, about Peyton Turner. And even, you know, what was your thing, too? Marquez Callaway. Just my only question right now is tight end with obviously Vinette's not exactly like your – I feel like tight end for – since Jimmy Graham left has been a void you've been trying to fill because Jared Cook's been so up and down. But for the – like if you want to vent more on the players there, Matt, that's just my two honest a sense about the team is that, look, they're not going to be bad, but they're not going to be this like team that's vying for the number one seed in the NFC. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'll predict the record towards the end, in which the scary thing is I've actually predicted the record right 2 years in a row so far, which, I mean, it's not too hard, 13-3, 12-4, considering all the talent they had. And their talent's still really top-heavy. And like you're saying with Pete Warner last year, or this season we drafted him in the second round out of Ohio State, linebacker has been an issue for this team outside of DeMario Davis, who I've said multiple times I think he's one of the best linebackers in the league easily. The second linebacker's always been the issue, and we don't really play three linebackers because we always have a nickel, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, on the team. We play three safety set for the most part, so we don't really ever have multiple linebackers on the field. So we don't need three linebackers; we just need a second one, and we've had trouble trying to find that second one. And we traded for Quan last year, who played pretty good, and he's back with the team now after the Achilles injury, which is crazy. He's actually going to be playing Week One, and he tore his Achilles in December. So that's insane, the recovery speed on that, and I'm happy to see that. I don't know how much he will play because you have Pete Warner and Zach Bond, who actually I thought he was a dead project because he was a pass rusher in college. We drafted him, and we put him at linebacker. And before the season started, before we signed Quan, Pete Warner was penciled in as a starter, but Pete got hurt. And that's actually a thing with some players here. I mean, you've had injuries in these practices already. Traquan's been hurt and hasn't practiced or played in any preseason games. Peyton Turner, he's looked good when he's practiced, but he's been hurt. So that's another issue. And Pete Warner got hurt, and he pretty much lost his starting job because Zach Bond's pretty much ahead of him in the depth chart now because he's been one of the offseason MVPs. I'd probably have it Marcus Davenport, Marquez Callaway, and then Zach Bond. Marcus Davenport, since we traded two firsts for him, the Saints fan base affectionately calls him Marcus Two First because he has not lived up to those two first-round picks. Technically, it's one if you think about it in the way you just give up the one in the future to move up. But that's neither here nor there. Should he stay healthy, and that's been his issues, he is going to light it up. Last year you had Trey Hendrickson lighting it up on the defensive line. I think it's going to be Marcus Davenport this year, should he stay healthy. He's been a monster in the preseason. He's just been in the backfield on all multiple plays, and I think that's going to definitely be his wheelhouse this year. And I just need him to stay healthy. And if Peyton Turner can get healthy, I think he'll come in there too in a rotational way because I think some defensive ends like Cam Jordan might have to slide inside a lot because, like I was alluding to earlier, defensive tackle depth is really weak. Alluding to some players on offense that could pop, I alluded to Marquez Callaway earlier. You asked about him. I think he could be really, really good. He's been the preseason superstar on offense. He had the two touchdown connections with Jameis Winston in the preseason game, and it's not like he's been going up against weak competition. He's drawn the main corners on the Jaguars with C.J. Henderson. He's went up against Marlon Humphrey on the Ravens, and he was making plays against these guys. So, granted, he was an undrafted free agent last year. He had a really good game last year when Michael Thomas was hurt. I think it was against the Panthers. I want to say he had a really good game against them. But I think he's going to show up and be definitely a factor. And I think him and Jameis are going to hook up quite a bit, mainly because the Traquan Smith connection hasn't been able to build much this offseason since he's been hurt a lot. As far as tight end goes, I think a lot of people were including myself, because I've been holding on to Adam Trautman. I'm like, okay, Jared Cook's going to be gone after next year. Let me go ahead and get this tight end, because as everyone knows, Jameis loves to throw the tight end. But it's not been Adam Trautman. It's been Juwan Johnson, who was a wide receiver, converted to tight end. He was an undrafted free agent last year, and we've converted him to tight end, and there's been definite mismatches there, and he's played really well. So I think he could be a sleeper tight end if you just want to punt. I know most people have gotten their drafts out of the way, but he's going to be on the waiver wires in most drafts, and I think he could be a sleeper tight end that you could have if you just don't want to have one of the bigger tight ends, like top 10 guys. And if you just want a guy who can maybe get you like 8, maybe 9 to 10 points a week, you could probably pick up Juwan Johnson and get by with that. But that's kind of how I'm feeling. As far as the record goes, I'm going to say, and I've been going back and forth with this, before all the injuries with David Onyemata getting the suspension, the Saints not really solving corner. And like you said, Desmond Trufant got signed today, so that could be something to watch out for. He could be a guy who could compete there at that second spot. But with all the issues of depth and suspensions and injuries going into it, I have the Saints going 9-8 right now. I'll have them competing for that 7th wild card spot, which I think is going to be very hard, because we'll get into that later, because there's a certain division that's just stacked in the NFC that's going to give me concerns. But right now I have them 9-8, so we'll see if I go 3 years in a row with predicting their record right.
Let's see about that.
All righty.
And then moving on, I feel like that division you brought up, we're going to save that for last, obviously, because there's a lot to uncover with that division. Mm-hmm. But next, we're going to talk a little bit NFC North, where there's a little bit of drama percolating, because I feel like besides one team, the rest... No. I'm saying with Detroit. Detroit is the one team.
Yeah.
Because Detroit, like, just to get it out of the way, this is a year where, look, if you win 4 or 5 games, I feel like you're going to see a lot of Dan Campbell. But at the same time, too, I think this is a big year for DeAndre Swift to break it. Not to break out, but to kind of establish himself as RB1 going forward with Detroit. But still, you got Jared Goff, a quarterback, a brand new head coach. Also do Aaron Glenn coming over from the Saints as well. But with the Detroit's a big where it's just like you want to see them. But at the same time, too, you know there's going to be a lot of pain this year in the Motor City once again.
I actually think that Detroit is a little unsung this year. I'm not going to go – like, here's the thing. Their schedule this year I think is really unfavorable. But if it was softer, I mean, this really could have been a sleeper team this year. Here's the thing. The Lions spent a decent chunk of change in the offseason. Like, ownership is clearly trying to make this team better. And I also think that, okay, we all – think Sean McVay is an offensive guru, and all that was holding him back was Jared Goff. But I mean, it's not like Jared Goff is far removed from absolutely lighting up the league the year that the Rams went to the Super Bowl just a couple of years ago. They have one of the, you know, better offensive lines in the league for sure. They, you know, TJ Hockenson, recent first round pick, you'd like to think there's something there. DeAndre Swift, again, you'd like to think there's something there. They're certainly, when they drafted him, they're expecting him to be kind of a centerpiece for that offense. They're thin at wide receiver, yes, but I think they got a good head coach, a guy that players have always gravitated towards, Dan Campbell. And I mean, there's talent on the defense, and obviously Okuda played terribly last year, but that's another guy where top 3 pick, there's certainly the expectation that some of these guys are going to play better than they have in the past. So I mean, I'd say that there could be some bright spots this year. I don't see a winning record, but I don't necessarily want to relegate them to picking number one overall like most of the league seems to think. I don't see this being a Houston Texans-level catastrophe by any means. Mm-hmm. They got talent on deep, you know, Okwara, Brockers, Collins. You know, they got guys that can make plays on defense.
I'm excited too to see how Owusu-Rike from Washington's going to look. Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to be a good receiver for them. So like they've got pieces, but it's just one of those things where when I say growing pains, because like I look at their schedule, their first 3 games versus San Francisco, at Green Bay, versus Baltimore, like that's, I'm sorry, you're kind of staring 0-3 down the barrel, but I feel like
totally
you
agree.
Know what you know what I think they're going to be. I like what's a team to reference? Huh. I just think there's going to be moments where, like, hey, they may surprise some people and, like, kind of catch a couple teams off guard. Kind of like what the Bengals were last year. Like, you know how they were looking before the Burrow injury?
Yep, that's actually the team that I was going to reference, but it's kind of going to be the opposite in terms of, like, whereas the Bengals impressed stuff from, like, an offensive, like, you know, air show perspective. I think that, like, that's not necessarily going to be the Lions winning script this year, but the same idea of, you know, kind of being that a sleeper team that, yeah, they're not a playoff contender yet, but you can see that there's progress being made.
Yeah, I mean, I think Anthony Lynn is going to have the offense looking pretty good. I think he'll be better as an offense coordinator than a head coach. Aaron Glenn, defense coordinator, he used to be secondary coach for the Saints. I think he was really good in what he did because multiple times we would have one of these other corners coming in mid-season and he would coach him up and get him ready. So maybe we will see Okuda playing better this season thanks to a better coach there. But as far as the whole picture with the Lions, I think they're going to be pretty bad. Like you said, Jared, they're not going to be Texans bad, but they're going to be like 3 to 4 wins bad is what I think. Because, I mean, you definitely downgraded at quarterback, I think. Because, I mean, Jared Goff, his problem is he had Sean McVay in his headset pretty much telling him what to do. And then the defenses would figure that out and be like, hey, let's switch things up with the line and switch things up and switch coverages. So Jared Goff will not recognize it because he has trouble reading defenses. And without that, I think it's going to be an issue. That's definitely going to be something him and Anthony Lynn are going to have to figure out, which could be a thing with, as Griff was alluding to earlier, it could be something for DeAndre Swift and TJ to rise up and be those short intermediary options for Goff to go through when there's nothing there. Because let's be frank, the wide receiver room's pretty weak. You did say Amon-Ra St. Brown could be pretty good, which maybe. We'll see. They signed Tyrell Williams as their number one, and he's bounced around multiple teams, so he's definitely not going to be the option there. And I just don't see them winning that many games. And looking at their schedule, it's pretty bad. They have a couple winnable games on there, so they might come away with a surprise win here or there because it's really hard to lose every single game in the NFL. You have to be just god awful to be that, but like I said,
I think from a divisional standpoint, like, you know, I see them at least splitting with Chicago. I see them at least splitting with Minnesota.
Even that's questionable to me, man, because I mean, I'll get into those teams later, but it's just questionable because this team, I don't think they're just going to be good at all. I mean, like I said, not Texans bad, but And they could definitely steal a win here or there, but it's just questionable for them.
Yeah, because, like, my whole thing with the Lions is just, like, kind of build – it's like the Lions this year is kind of like where the Jets are, where it's like, you know what, hey, you're starting to build something. Now, obviously, I'm saying this more with the Jets because of after the injuries with Carl Lawson and Vinnie Curry, but build towards the future. Look at what your five-year plan is. That's why Dan Campbell got a six-year deal off the hop to go and coach there because, look, they can't just up and fire him in 2 years if they're bad. They know, look, we're in this for the long haul. And there's a chance they're probably going to be picking top five, but I'm just not going to be here like you guys are saying. They're not going to be the worst team in the league, no.
I just don't think very highly of this division in general. I think that this is going to be one of those years where the Packers just kind of get fat off of these division wins and they finish with it's going to suck. It's going to absolutely suck if Green Bay has the best record in the NFC because for all intents and purposes, the kind of offseason that they had and just with all this Aaron Rodgers drama, like they should implode just from a locker room perspective. But just because the rest of their division is likely to finish with losing records, in my opinion, you know, they could get fat and then they have this unsuspecting great record where, you know, people think that they're better than they actually are. But that being said, I do think that they're going to be the only team in this division with a winning record. I think that Chicago, you know, somehow snuck into the playoffs last year, backdoored their way in. And Fields, yes, there's promise, but rookie quarterbacks almost always struggle. Minnesota coming off a horrendous year defensively, and they're obviously preparing to make the transition from Kirk Cousins in the not-too-distant future. And, we all know his track record against quality opponents. So they're going to do what they always do, the Vikings. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some pretty flashy performances from Cook and JJ, but I think it's just going to be a repeat of last year. There's going to be some good offensive performances and ultimately a middle-of-the-road record and no playoffs. And the Packers are probably going to win the division by at least a 3-game difference, I would say.
My whole thing with the Bears is, and I'm going to say this quickly, I don't think Matt Nagy is fired at the end of the year. I don't think Ryan Pace is either. And I've seen most Bear fans go, and shout out Tommy because no resident Bear fan of the show. You don't want to start Fields right away because I keep saying this, like, you really want your first game in the NFL going up against one of the greatest defensive linemen in the history of the league? No. Like, because basically Fields and Nagy and Pace can kind of go to ownership and basically say, hey, like, look at what Mahomes was, and they can kind of hope for not a Mahomes-ish career for Fields, but like, hey, in the second year he comes in, he plays well. But I still think, I think this year for the Bears, it's going to be that like 8-9 season, you know, where maybe, hey, they snatch a game or two here and there, but at the same time too, they look kind of ugly because if you look at them, they didn't really do anything to get better. They lost a lot on the defensive side. They lost Kyle Fuller to the Broncos. But the one thing I think that could help them is if, like, Khalil Mack resurgence to a DPOY level, and even someone like Eddie Goldman who opted out last year, and then Roquan Smith, I think, is a player a lot of people in the Chicago area are expecting to have a leap. But for me, it's just that they don't really have a whole lot of offensive weapons unless, like, say, a Cole Kmet comes out of nowhere and performs. But, Jared, I'm going to go against the grain. I honestly think that the Minnesota Vikings are a dark horse in the NFC. I'm only saying this because their defense has gotten better. Mike Zimmer is a defensive head coach, and it's an odd year. In an even year, the Vikings suck. In an odd year, they make the playoffs. So I'm going off that math where, look, in 2017 season, what happened? They made it to the NFC Championship game. Now, obviously, that's a very painful memory for our other panelists on tonight's NFC Preview Edition show. But you know what? That's how the cookie crumbles. And then with the Packers, I'll say this. Their season either will end in success or that whole Last Dance thing everyone's going to laugh about. You know, I referenced the whole Brady meme thing earlier where it's kind of like pushed aside. Oh, hey, it was what it was because they won the Super Bowl. If they had lost the Super Bowl, that would be brought up so much where it probably would have gotten to Tom. So that's why I'm saying it with this whole Last Dance thing. Because, look, the Packers are going to just sneak their way in and win 12 to 13 games this year. Like, it's going to happen. But I would love to but based off the season that they've had and everything, the fact that the last few years they've kind of like snuck their way into the one seed. I'm only saying that because of like results where, look, I think 2019, the Saints should have had it, but there was a couple games that they didn't go their way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time too, like, look, for the Packers, it's shit or get off the pot. That's an honest opinion for me for the Packers. Mm-hmm. It's you either got to win it or blow it the fuck up.
Yeah. I mean, like the offseason has been with the Packers with the whole Last Dance whole thing. It's just, you definitely probably see Aaron Rodgers leaving after this season unless something changes. And I mean, it's not like they did a lot this offseason. I mean, they got Randall Cobb back, but I mean, what's that going to amount to? It kind of just made him happy that because the front office hasn't been treating their veterans with any care, really, according to what Rodgers is thinking and what other people have thought. I don't follow the Packers that much to keep up with, but that's what I've heard. As far as the Packers go, I feel like they're going to blow out the division. It's going to be, like you guys said, it's not going to be close. Their main issue was their other cornerback opposite of Jaire Alexander, Eric Stokes. He's no longer going to be the starter anymore. I think it's Kevin King now. So I think that's a marginal upgrade. So you should see a little bit better stuff there. Davante Adams should be a beast. He's going to be amazing. As far as the other two teams, I think the Bears are kind of fun to talk about since they have the quarterback thing going on. They got Andy Dalton, who's slotted to be the starter for at first. And I mean, look, Andy Dalton's going to be better than Trubisky. I mean, Andy Dalton's not a great quarterback by any means, but he can do enough. He doesn't just like make these boneheaded mistakes, and if you give him enough around him, he can make some stuff work. And I mean, they have Allen Robinson, who is a fantastic underrated wide receiver. Every year, he just puts up numbers, and he's very consistent. So that's definitely going to help them. Outside of him, there's not a lot. You'd like to see Darnell Mooney take a step up for them. David Montgomery had a fantastic season last season, but we'll see if that continues with him. I think he's a little overrated myself. And the defense, like you said, Griff, they've lost some pieces. So I think they're going to take a slight step down, especially because that offensive line does not look good. And that's definitely a problem and something that could lead to Justin Fields getting onto the field sooner rather than later. Because whenever you draft one of these first round quarterbacks, the fans will be clamoring for them to get on the field once their current quarterback is struggling. It doesn't take very long in most cases, unless you have a solid stability there, like with the Chiefs situation where they had Alex Smith there, who was good enough to get the Chiefs where they needed to be, where the fans weren't just unhappy about it. But I think it could happen here with that offensive line giving Andy Dalton troubles. And looking at some of the preseason games, Justin Fields, man, he was running for his life. It's going to be looking like how the Seahawks had with Russell Wilson for quite a few years after the Super Bowl, where their offensive line was subpar and he was having to run for his life constantly. It's going to look similar to that. As far as the Vikings go, I think they'll be a good team who will be kind of like the Saints. I think they'll be kind of vying for that one of those wild card spots because the offense is going to be great. Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, they're going to be amazing. Kirk Cousins, he's good enough to get you where you need to be. And the defense, it could be all right. But that's kind of my two cents on the whole division outlook.
You know, Matt, I'm glad you mentioned Justin Fields running for his life. And, Griff, I'm glad you mentioned some of the defenses that the Bears are going to be facing this year. Because when you're talking about a team that if they're not going to be a playoff team this year, they get off to a rough start. Right around the time you'd expect the rookie to slide in would be about that, you know, one-third mark of the season. Well, let's see who the Bears are playing as that first half of the season is winding down. They got a four-game stretch against the Buccaneers, the 49ers, the Steelers, and the Ravens. Granted, there's a bye week in between, but that's four really, really tough defenses in a row for a rookie quarterback. Not to mention with Andy Dalton starting the season, two of their first three games are road games against the Rams and the Browns. I mean, you look at this, and then, oh, and before that Bucs stretch, they play the Packers right before that, a road game in Las Vegas. This just screams them falling into a pit that they can't climb out of, starting the season like 2-7 or something like that.
Also, that Steelers game is on Monday Night Football as well. That's the thing. The Bears, for some reason, have more Sunday Night Football games than the New England Patriots this year. I'm sorry, that's just me bitching about my team. But if I look at the schedule right here, I think that October 3rd, Week 4 game against the Lions or Vegas is where you're probably going to see Fields come in. Because the way I look at it, I'm going to put in this in the wrestling terms, Jared. It's like if you have this new, or like, because we're talking about this off air. It's like, say, if you want someone to have a squash on AEW, you're not going to put Adam Cole in that situation. No, you're going to put a superstar where, you know what, hey, they're not exactly a main event caliber talent. Andy Dalton is that. So Andy Dalton's the jobber, and Justin Fields is the guy who you're giving the push to. So that's just the wrestling terms way I look at it for this whole situation, where that's why I said it. Because imagine, it's like I said earlier, you really want Justin Fields' first memory in the NFL on primetime on NBC in a brand new stadium running from his life from Aaron Donald? No, if Matt Nagy does that, it does not look good. Because I feel like Matt Nagy right now is in a lose-lose situation where if he doesn't start Fields, it looks bad. But if he starts Fields and Fields looks like crap, he looks bad. There's no winning if you're Matt Nagy in this situation.
If I was Nagy, I would start Fields week four against Detroit. It has to be, honestly, at home against Detroit, 1 o'clock game. Weather hasn't gotten too cold out yet. This has to be considered the easiest game on their entire schedule. I mean, that's where I would do it to at least, like, that's the best place for him to shake the butterflies. And then it's going to be an onslaught after that. But hey, you just look at the supporting cast. You look at who they're up against this year. It's just not going to be their season. And as a Giants fan, I will be rooting very aggressively against the Bears so that draft pick is as high as it can possibly be.
The only thing I'll say, too, is I feel like Mike Zimmer's seat is hotter than Nagy's just because of this whole Justin Fields stuff. Because We all know if the Vikings have a bad season, Mike Zimmer is gone. My only concern with him is that Clint Kubiak has not looked good in the preseason when it comes to coordinating an offense.
Sure. The Vikings, I definitely, there's the potential here that, you know, they have a playoff caliber roster and they could be a fringe contender. I actually think that with the seventh wild card spot, it opens up the opportunity for them. I think they're going to be in the hunt. I think what it is for me is this defense is just ancient. I mean, come on, Harrison Smith and Patrick Peterson have to be a combined like 110 years old at this point. So, yeah.
Like, they had to release their other guy, Gladney, because of a horrible domestic violence issue.
And he played like crap to begin with, too. So there you go. You can chalk him up to a first round cornerback bust. I know all about that from the DeAndre Baker fiasco. So, yeah. Bad luck for the Vikings on the defensive side of the football lately. But, I mean, they did bring in Dalvin Tomlinson, who will help them out up front. They still have Danielle Hunter, who has the potential to be a premier pass rusher in the league this year. So, yeah, I mean, I see it being fringe either way. They'll barely get in or they're barely this out.
Hundred percent. But anyway, guys, like we said, we're going to save the best for last because the most intriguing division is the NFC West because you have so many teams who can do stuff. And I know everyone says, like, there's only three teams in here, but part of me likes to believe in the Arizona Cardinals. I think Kyler Murray can be it. But here's the thing. I don't think anyone's seat as a head coach in the NFL is warmer than Cliff Kingsbury's.
I definitely agree.
Just because, yeah. Look, and also, here's the thing with Steve Keim, who's Teflon. Like, if you go back, I've said this multiple times in the podcast, if you look at his draft history from 2013 when he became GM onward, he's only really hit on two first-round picks. A lot of the guys are not in the NFL. The only one, like DJ Humphrey, kind of made strides when he got his second contract. But apart from that, a lot of the guys who he drafted are either not in the league or in low positions, like Josh Rosen. And he's also, like, Arizona is a team where I feel like it's like the Vikings. They're either a fringe wildcard team or they're missing the playoffs.
I think that that's the case just due to the competition of their division. I think that when you talk about, you know, third-year leap contenders, you know, with Kyler Murray taking such a huge leap forward last year, I think that the potential is totally there for him to be top 10 quarterback in this offense really starts churning out the points. Obviously, losing Kenyon Drake and replacing him with James Conner, essentially. The running game is a little bit questionable. We know Chase Edmonds is a good pass catcher, but they don't necessarily have a dependable guy that can pound the ball. But with DeAndre and Christian Kirk, and AJ Green is just gravy at this point. Defensively, I think that Isaiah Simmons, if they are able to really find a way to fully unlock the playbook with that guy, that's what's going to take their defense to the next level, because he was drafted to be this, you know, jackknife guy, and they kind of couldn't figure out where to put him last year, so he ended up really suffering in terms of the amount of snaps he played. So he's the type of guy who he's so versatile that if they find a way to really unlock his full potential, he's going to elevate this defense. That being said, I don't, me like everybody else, I don't see them winning the division, but heads are going to roll if they don't make the playoffs. Because, I mean, yeah, the division's tough, but, I mean, they've invested a lot into trying to make this team great. And there's so much talent here that it would honestly be a big head-scratcher if they're not able to find a way to – yeah, they got some tough top competition, but good teams beat other good teams.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a theme with this conference is these teams, I think they're all really good because I honestly could see – I mean, it's not really it's pretty an easy take to make because I think three of these teams are going to make the playoffs. As to which three teams it is, I'm not sure, but it's definitely going to be three teams from this division making the playoffs, I believe. The Cardinals, they could make that push, and it's just, I know Cliff Kingsbury brought the air raid offense in and made it his own the way he does in the NFL. And that's definitely something we have to see if he can keep developing that and keep developing with Kyler Murray. Definitely something to keep the watch of. That would be an interesting thing now to think about it, seeing Joe Brady come over to the Cardinals and work with Kyler Murray. That'd be interesting to see if Cliff Kingsbury ends up getting the axe this offseason. But the Cardinals, they started off hot last season, and they kind of fizzled out as the season went on. But, I mean, they have some favorable matchups. This year they play both the Lions and the Texans, so you'd like to give them just two easy wins there. I'm pretty sure I think they all play the Lions and the Texans. So those games are going to be massacres, I believe, each week. But you never know. They could come out and surprise. You never know with NFL teams. It could happen. But the Cardinals, I think they're going to be that team that's kind of pushing towards the end there. They could be one of those teams that's kind of pushing like 8-9, 9-8, maybe competing with the Vikings and the Saints for that last playoff spot. Maybe all four teams in the division somehow get in. That would be pretty unprecedented to see. But yeah, that's kind of what I think on the Cardinals.
My whole thing on the Cardinals is just that, and I'll say this too, last year, if you guys remember that infamous Bills-Cardinals game, both teams kind of went in separate directions after that. Like, the Bills losing that was actually a blessing in disguise for them. And the Cardinals, that's where it just went downhill, because then they had the loss to Seattle, and the Patriots, and then the Rams, and then they beat the Eagles and the Giants. But besides that, they didn't really do much. And the reports out of the Cardinals camp is that Michael Bidwell was really pissed about that last year. So I think if they have a bad season, they miss out, it's scorched earth. I think Kime and Kingsbury are both gone.
You know, what's interesting about this division to me, I feel like the Cardinals seem to be, I guess, the common pick to finish last, but the Niners are the ones with the quarterback controversy that worries me, because they got every other box checked but that. And typically, teams with a quarterback crisis situation do not thrive. Usually, that's considered a rebuilding year. And with this uncertainty surrounding Garoppolo and Lance, I feel like that's going to hold this team back in terms of being great, and might even open the door for the Cardinals to finish second in this division, because the Seahawks, I feel like they're heading in the total wrong way defensively, and I'm gonna say they could be headed for this is a worst case scenario, but a rich man's Atlanta Falcons type situation where they win these wild shootouts because they got Russell Wilson, DK, and Lockett, but you know, some would argue Carson could regress. And defensively, they were kind of a mess for most of last season. So I think that the Rams,
contract Adams,
you know? Yeah. So I think that the Rams are probably the most sure thing. And that's why myself and, you know, you hear a lot of analysts talking about them as being the division favorites. I feel like most secure in picking them at number one here. But it really wouldn't shock me at all if Arizona finished second, because there is a clear plan here. They know exactly what they want to do this season. And you could argue, like, you know, Seattle, they got a game plan as well. But just heading – again, I feel like Arizona's defense has the potential to take a big step forward. Seattle's continuing to take steps backwards. And then when you throw in that San Francisco uncertainty – I feel like the Cardinals, whether it's second or third, they are going to make the playoffs this year.
One thing I want to say about the Niners quickly, I'm just going to, sorry, Matt, is I feel like Garoppolo is going to start, but the second he is bad, he's getting yanked. That's why I feel like Lynch and Shanahan are almost like just thriving at that chance for Jimmy to fail. And then as soon as that happens, it's, yep, no, we're making a quarterback change. That's just how I feel like, and that could be toxic, because and even with the Niners too, the fact that you have a brand new offensive coordinator, brand new defensive coordinator, because Sala took Mike LaFleur with him to New York, so we'll see where that goes. One concern I also have with the Niners is Nick Bosa, because obviously I know he's a stud of a defensive end, but that injury, you don't exactly bounce back immediately when you're on the defensive side of the ball. Now, he may prove me wrong, but I'm just saying that's something to look out for with the Niners. But the one thing I will say, though, offensively, I think Trey Sermon will be RB1 by week 7.
One thing about them with the running back situation, Sermon, I think, has a lot of potential. But going into this year, you know, taking Lance third overall, and again, having that kind of uncertain quarterback situation, with how well Jeff Wilson played last year, I really thought they would have made more of an effort to retain that guy because, I mean, maybe he wasn't.
He got hurt. Sorry to cut you off, but I think Jeff Wilson got hurt. I don't think they re-signed. Like, I think he's still with the team. I think he's just out for the year.
Oh, shoot. Well, all right. That's my mistake. I thought they let the guy loose. Well, all right. That kills the entire tangent I was about to go off on. So you can probably cut this part out and to save me the embarrassment of looking stupid in front of everybody. But, or maybe you keep this in because that was a funny promo bit right there.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Up to you, Griff. Up to you.
Yeah, no, he signed a one-year extension on January 26th, but he was placed on the reserve pup list on August 31st.
Huh, yeah, all right. That would have been actually, yeah, that would have been a big tool for that. Because it wouldn't have made sense to me. It's like why cut a guy loose after a performance like that last year? I thought he signed somewhere else. It's my mistake.
It's all good. Sorry to cut you off. I just want to make sure, like, that people know, like, hey, that, like, not that we always get stuff right, because we always get stuff wrong, but I just wanted to, like, let you know, hey, this is what's actually going on. It's happened to me. It's happened to others. It'll happen multiple times in the show, but you know what? That's the fun of this. I don't edit anything out unless it's something that's, like, teetering on, like, either controversial or someone says something really, really bad, but I've never had yet to do that, and hopefully I never get to do that.
Mm-hmm. As far as the 49ers go with their whole thing, and Kyle Shanahan there, I mean, Kyle Shanahan's a fantastic head coach, especially on the great offensive mind, one of the best offensive mind coaches up there with Sean McVay and Sean Payton. They definitely have to figure out this quarterback thing, and he's been saying they're going to have, like, there's been rumors of a two quarterback system. I don't know how that's going to work. You see that in college, and I'm just not a big fan of it because these quarterbacks need to get in a rhythm because completing these passes and getting these, especially when you're kind of going up tempo and stuff, you have to have a rhythm going to you and you have to develop these chemistry with these players. 49ers across the board, they have a really good roster and it's just the fact of they need to figure out what they're going to do at quarterback. And if they want to, they could just keep Jimmy Garoppolo out there. He's good enough to get you where you need to go. With their great offensive weapons, Brandon Ayuk should make even more strides. He was looking fantastic last year, as a lot of the wide receivers were. I think you'll definitely see a lot of these second-year wide receivers still making strides on that. Debo Samuel, will he be more healthy this year? Trey Sermon, as you alluded to, and Raheem Mostert. What are they going to do at running back? It's kind of like a revolving door there because they always get hurt. Kind of reminds me of the Saints one year where we just had to keep cycling through running backs. But, I mean, it's bound to happen to every team because that's one of the most injured positions in football. So it's definitely a question mark with the 49ers just because of that quarterback thing. What are they going to do there? I mean, honestly, I'd probably keep Jimmy Garoppolo there because we've seen these quarterbacks from, like, Carson Wentz from North Dakota State, which is the same situation with Trey Lance, how the competition in that level of college football is a lot weaker and it's a lot different. And Trey Lance, I feel like they only played like one game last season and he did not look too great from what I remember. And I think it was against University of Arkansas at Conway and it was not that good. So I think there's definitely going to be some kinks to work out. You see it with Ja'Marr Chase on the Bengals. He's missed quite a few games in college. And now he's back in the NFL after the draft, and it's going to be a similar situation with that, where you got to get the kinks worked out because COVID kind of messed up a lot of college schedules. As far as the other teams go, like with the Seahawks, I think you just got to let Russ cook, as they were saying all last season. Let him do it. I know Pete Carroll's been saying he wants to go back to where they were running the ball a lot with Chris Carson, but Chris Carson's a lot older. You do have people like Rashad Penny behind him there, but I mean, come on. We kind of see how that's going to happen with him and Sony Michel being first round running backs. Hasn't panned out quite well for either of them. But I think the Seahawks are going to be good, mainly just because they're all, as long as you have Russell Wilson, you're going to get somewhere. He's a great quarterback. He's one of the top guys in the league to me. And the defense could do just enough to get them along. And when you have offensive stars at wide receiver like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, the play action game is amazing once you put that all together. Maybe if they do run Chris Carson more than they did last season. But, I guess I'll get to the Rams in a little bit.
One take I have about the Rams is, though, quickly, if the Matt Stafford experiment doesn't work out, how soon before that do we start kind of questioning Sean McVay as a coach? Like, I'm just throwing this out there. Obviously, I know he's a great head coach, but I'm just saying one of those things where it's just like, how many more chances is this guy going to get to go reach the mountaintop, if you will?
Well, it sucks because, you know, they lost Cam Akers, too. So it's like the onus is really on Stafford to deliver this year. And I actually wasn't one of those people like who thought, oh, my gosh, like Stafford is like a super huge difference maker in terms of an upgrade from Jared Goff. It's an upgrade. It's an upgrade. But it's not like this is, you know, we're going from Dan
Winston to Brady.
Bill Jones to yeah, exactly. There you go. I was going to say Jones to Mahomes, but same idea. So, yeah, like I think that it's tough because you have Akers, who had the potential to be a top 10 offensive player in the league this year, a guy who was absolutely thriving as a centerpiece of this offense, and you're losing him. And, I mean, I do think that this is still a well-coached enough offense that they're still going to have an effective running game, but it's going to be a completely different situation having a committee situation with Henderson and Michelle versus Akers potentially being a bell cow. I mean, it depends how it pans out. If they do, I don't think that they should regress with Stafford, though. If they do regress and everybody's healthy, that's a point where I think you could begin to question McVay. But I think with the supporting cast and just how well this team's been run the last several years, I'd be pretty surprised if the performance was so subpar that those questions began to arise. I think you might see, let's say they lose in the playoffs and people start jumping to those conclusions. But at that point, it would be like, guys, you know, they made it to X round. Let's give them some credit. But I think that with this cast of receivers, Woods, Kupp, Van Jefferson, even Deshaun being a sneaky little deep threat there. Yeah, there you go. And I think Stafford's going to help McVay unlock the playbook. I think he's going to be throwing, you know, he's going to be throwing it a lot. But I don't, they shouldn't necessarily be in a lot of reckless shootouts with the way that defense plays. And if they're able to still produce that effective running game, I mean, I'm not really, entrusting Michelle to suddenly rediscover his form from a couple of years ago, but Henderson definitely looked good in games during the early mid of last season before Akers fully took over. So I think that they still have some dependable guys there to create that running game on the ground. And yeah, I mean, I look at the Rams, I see the class of the NFC. May not be by a country mile. They might just barely edge out the Packers for the number one seed. That's my prediction. But I just think they're so balanced on both sides. I think that Stafford's, an absolute upgrade at QB. And I love the potential of this group of receivers. I think they got the potential to put up points in bunches, much like they did the last time they went to the Super Bowl. And how can you not have confidence in this defense with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, like two of the best, maybe the best player at their respective position, and they got two of them. So, I think the odds are in their favor.
I definitely agree with you there, Jared, and I'd like to mention Tyler Higbee now that Gerald Everett's no longer with the team. I think Higbee's going to be a massive part of the offense as well. And Matt Stafford, like you're saying, he's a definite upgrade, like I was saying earlier with Jared Goff. I feel like teams kind of figured out what they needed to do with Jared Goff, and Matt Stafford definitely has way more experience than Jared Goff at reading NFL defenses, and he's put up numbers and stats, and people have always said he's kind of one of the more underrated quarterbacks. Well, now he's on a team that has expectations. Let's see if he can live up to that, because the Lions, I feel like they've only had like one playoff game, maybe two the whole time he was there. I know they played one against the Saints, and it wasn't really a close one.
It would be two then, because they played the Cowboys one year.
Okay, so it would be two then. But I mean, let's see what he can do in the postseason. I think the team's going to be a really good regular season team. I think I have them winning the division. It's going to be close between them and the Seahawks. They're probably teetering. I think this whole division is going to beat each other up. So I think the division winner is probably going to cap out like 11 wins, maybe 12 wins, just because there's going to be a lot of games won here and there by each team in this division since it's so strong. So that's why I think the Packers are going to be the number one seed. But as far as the Rams go, I'd probably predict them to win it just because I think the quarterback upgrade is going to be big enough to overcome the difference between them and the Seahawks from last year. The wide receivers should see an increase in volume, especially since, as you're alluding to, Cam Akers, who got hurt. And I actually traded him in Dynasty like a week or two before he got hurt.
Oh, look at you.
I traded him and Travis Etienne. So they both got hurt as soon as I traded them. So if you do any trades with me in Dynasty, I would be wary of, especially if it's a running back, to get hurt. So
immediate rejection.
Yeah, it worked out for me, fortunately. But I think this offense, passing-wise, should look really good. Robert Woods is a fantastic receiver. Cooper Kupp is fantastic. They're both very underrated. The defense, as you were alluding to earlier, should be good. I mean, you have freaking Aaron Donald. This guy is a beast, and I don't see any regression coming to this guy for a while. And he's, especially with, like, some defensive ends can go pretty long into their career before they really see huge regression. I mean, Cam Jordan's been going on it for quite a few years. He saw kind of a regressive year last year, but it's definitely a position of longevity. And I mean, Aaron Donald, he's just a freak of nature. Jalen Ramsey, of course, is good. I just don't see where this team finishes below 10 wins, 10 to 9 wins at the minimum. They're just stacked, man. And I have very high faith in Sean McVay. And I mean, I may hate this team for obvious reasons, but I mean with me being a Saints fan, there's a lot of teams that I would hate for obvious reasons. There's been too much heartbreak in my life with the Saints, but that's neither here nor there. But I think the Rams are gonna win this division, but it's gonna be close between them and the Seahawks. It's gonna be a really close race, and it's gonna be a very fun division to watch all year. There's so many storylines with each team, and each team having these expectations, and just seeing how things shake out. It's going to make for some good football for the year.
Well, they want to add on Robert Woods. Sorry, Griff.
That's okay.
Yeah, so with Woods, just real quick note, I think that with Akers being out, I think he is going to see a lot of volume this year. I think he was a guy that was targeting in fantasy, scooped him up in at least one league. I think that they liked to, you know, splice in those jet sweeps with him last year, and with Akers out, they're absolutely going to take advantage of that guy's versatility, with them needing to be a little bit more creative in terms of how they're going to structure their running game. So I think that he could potentially be a fantasy powerhouse this year at wide receiver.
My only concern with the Rams is I just feel like their defense without Brandon Staley is going to look a little different, obviously. And the losses of John Johnson and Troy Hill, I think, are you're going to notice it. But at the same time, too, I feel like where this team's weaknesses are, the positives outweigh the cons. I think the Rams are going to win the division. But if I had a hot take to give on this division, I honestly can see it going LA 1, Arizona or San Fran 2-3, and Seattle finishing 4th. I honestly can see a world where that happens.
Yeah, I think that's what I was kind of alluding to earlier. I think that, like, you know, again, when you look at this division and there's one team with that glaring defensive deficiency in Seattle, and, you know, when you're a team that, you know, if they're pretty much going to win one type of way, right, with Russell Wilson just blowing teams out of the water, and sure, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and he's got, you know, one, possibly two elite weapons at receiver to do so. But when you are kind of like drifting into that one-dimensional territory, particularly on offense, there's going to be those games where you don't score 30 plus. It's going to happen. So that being, I think that's the reason why I think Seattle's ceiling is like 11 wins.
No, 100%. And So I asked you guys off air, who would you, like, if you had to replace a playoff team with a non-playoff team, out of all the teams that made the playoffs last year, the one I would, I could say the Bears, but I feel like that's easy. I'm going to go a little off the wall, and I'm going to say if I had to knock a team out, I would say Seattle, and then you replace them with Arizona or Minnesota. I think you, one of those two will get in. That's just me. Like, if I had to pick, if I had to pick and choose, just because also, too, I just do not want to pick the Dallas Cowboys, because I feel like for as good as it is for when they're good, oh, it's just so much better for them being just so bad.
Yeah, as you'd say, the Bears are definitely an easy choice. I think you can remove them with any of the teams that we had kind of said earlier that are going to be fringe playoff teams. So I think like the Vikings would probably be the easy one there, or the Saints, even though the Saints were in the playoffs last season, but they'll just be converted down to a wild card team versus a division winner. And then since you said something about the Cowboys, like I said earlier, I think the Cowboys are going to win the division. So I think I would switch out the football team. I said the Redskins earlier. I'm still getting used to that. This team needs a name. Please get a name. The football team, switch them with the Cowboys.
Accidents happen. That's why they put erasers on pencils.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Griff, I really liked your swap the Seahawks with the Cardinals, because I definitely think that there's a world where that could happen, as we just discussed. But yeah, I mean, I would say out of vengeance, I will select the football team to be replaced by the Cardinals. Although I think the Bears are the easy choice to be yanked out of the playoffs. Because I do think that – I think the Bears are less likely to make the playoffs than the football team is. Because for all of my spite, if Washington had a clear answer at quarterback, I'd absolutely peg them for a playoff spot this year. But I really think that the quarterback situation here is so dire and just so – I see this ending badly that they're not going to make it. And Arizona – Like we went over, I think there's too much talent here and too much pressure to win. There's just too much pressure to win. Like, there's going to be hell to pay. And it just seems unfathomable to me that you could have a roster with this many talented players not make the playoffs. I mean, everybody's pretty much in agreement that Kyler Murray is, you know, on his way to solidifying himself as being among the elite NFL quarterbacks. And it's like, a guy like that, throwing a freaking DeAndre Hopkins, it's like how can that not be in the playoffs? And again, with that emerging defense with a lot of potential there, not talking about the 65-year-old J.J. Watt they just scooped up, but everybody else, I think, it looks very promising. so, yeah, I think Arizona, man. Arizona, I'm going to say it right now, 11 wins. I think this is going to be a good team this year, a good, good football team. I absolutely expect them to not only play in the playoffs, but win at least one game.
One take I have quickly is, though, if I'm picking a one seed, I'm going to go with the Rams. I'm honestly going to go with the Rams. I think, you know what, I think it's a three-team race between them, the Bucs, and the Packers. I just think that, look, something's just telling me that, like, I want to be a little more off the grid. I don't want to be the whole generic, like, you know how it's, yeah, you know, Kansas City's going to run through the AFC and Tampa's going to run through the NFC. I think, because also, sneaky good matchup, week 3, 425, Rams versus Buccaneers. One to look out for.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think the Rams would be my pick for the number one seed as well. May not necessarily run away with it. I don't think any – I'm going to say this. The whole NFC, I don't think any team is going to win 14 games or more. I think that 13 is everybody's ceiling. I think the Packers have the easiest path, but they have some – you know, there's drama there. There's – dysfunction behind the scenes, and that stuff tends to rear its ugly head. You know, it's a long season, especially with that extra game. I think that's going to hold them back from reaching that 14 plus level. Buccaneers, I think they're facing the potential Brady pullback at his age, and the Rams happen to play in football's best division. So I do like their chances to, I like 13-4 for them. I think that they're going to recover nicely from that absolute mauling they're going to get week six when they have to play the Giants. But other than that, should be a pretty stellar season. That was a joke. That was a joke.
But one thing I'm just looking at here quickly with the Packers, their schedule, they do have a couple like gimme games, but it's not exactly like easy. Like they start with the Saints, then the Lions, and then they go to San Francisco on Sunday night, and then they play the Steelers at home in Cincy and Chicago. So that's kind of like the cupcake right there. So there's three wins that are more likely guaranteed. Versus football team at the Cardinals on a short week Thursday, which could try that. I think it's a trap game for the Packers. And then at the Chiefs, and then versus the Seahawks, at the Vikings, versus the Rams going into the bye, because they don't have their bye until week 13. So it honestly wouldn't shock me if, you know how in years past where Seattle would struggle and then everyone would be like, just give it some time, and then they kind of, get into the last like 5-6 weeks and just kick it into another gear. I can see a world where that's the Green Bay Packers this year, where they struggle. Everyone thinks like, oh, look, this is headed for an ugly divorce. But then they flick the switch and then they just make a run and get into the playoffs as one of the top three seeds.
I know I said earlier I had the Packers winning, but I think it's going to be a real close race between the Packers and the Buccaneers. I mean, the Packers do have some gimme games because, I mean, they play the Lions twice, so that definitely helps.
1 week 18.
Yeah. And they'll definitely be resting starters that game. There's no doubt about that. Might see Jordan Love be playing in that game, honestly. But I mean, looking at some of the Tampa Bay schedule, I mean, I don't really see any like super duper tough games. I mean, they play in a little bit of, yeah. Like looking at it, I'd have like the Rams is of course one of the big ones. And then aside from the Rams, the Bills would be a pretty big game for them, but looking at this, I don't see them playing like any huge division winning teams or big time contenders, honestly. I just don't. I see a lot of easy matchups for them. So having them slotted at 3-4 losses, I think is what I said earlier. It's probably about right. So I think it's going to be between the Bucs and the Packers for sure. And the Rams and the Seahawks are just going to beat each other up trying to win the division, in my opinion, to keep them out of contention for that number one seed. So it's going to be a close race between the Packers and the Bucs, but the Packers definitely have some gimme games, but I feel like they have a bit more tougher games because, I mean, they play teams like the Steelers, they play the Chiefs, they play the Seahawks, they play the Rams, they play the Browns and the Ravens. I think it's just going to be a little bit harder for the Packers. But I think Tampa Bay plays more middle-of-the-road teams, while the Packers do have some teams that I feel like they could just steamroll. So we'll just have to see how that plays out.
I want to say one thing quickly about the Bucs-Bills game. That is a game that Bills fans are probably foaming at the mouth for, because if you guys don't know, Tom's all-time record against Buffalo is, I think, like 31-3. It's something to point out. Like, that city fucking hates Tom Brady, and half the reason why I wanted the Bills to get to the Super Bowl last year is so that the Bills could like get to the mountaintop, and then Tom Brady's waiting there and then rips their hearts out of their soul.
Yeah, I'll say this about the Bucs schedule. It's really, if the NFC South hits its floor, like let's say, all this Saints adversity catches up with them, and let's say the Panthers and the Falcons both pretty much finish just as badly as they did last year. The Buccaneers could very well waltz to the number one seed because I'm with you guys, particularly Matt. Not a lot of challenging games coming up on their schedule. I could actually pretty well see a maybe 7-1 start to the season. I think they dropped that Rams game, being on the road, but they could win all the others before the bye. And then they have that kind of challenging stretch. I mean, there's a lot of, again, it really hinges on the quality of their division because 1, 2, 3, 4 of their final six games are divisional games. And outside of that, you get the Redskins and the Giants back to back. Football team, Giants, and Colts, three consecutive potential top 10 defenses. So that could be pretty challenging on them. And then you got that Buffalo game is obviously one that a lot of people have circled on their calendars. So This could be a case where the Bucks start off really hot and falter a little bit down the stretch, which may prevent them from securing the top seed. But I don't think it's going to stand in the way of them winning the division.
Yeah, like when I say that with the Bucks earlier, like when I said like I don't see them like anyone running away, I was just saying, or when I said the generic pick, I just wanted to go a little bit off the grid. Like I feel like the Bucks very well could win the NFC. When it comes to the regular season, George Halas Trophy, we'll wait and see. My only thing is, like I said, I just wanted to be different. That's why I went with the Rams. But at the same time, too, I feel like, yeah, the Bucks are going to be that team where, you know, they got off to this hot start, but I feel like, you know, they could drop a couple of games there in the middle of the season where people start to go, what's going on here? But if you look at their schedule, their last three games, two are against the Panthers by then, which, Jerry, you're right, they could hit their floor and just wipe the floor with them. And then they get the New York Jets week 17, which I'm sorry, but, like, putting that game that week, I'm just like, come on, NFL. Give them a challenge. Like, last year, too, the Bucs had Atlanta twice in the last two games of the season, and then the Detroit Lions sandwiched in there.
Yeah, see, that Atlanta road game, see, that's the thing with these divisional games. Again, if Atlanta does have a quasi rebound, you know, that could be like the, all right, you gotta win this game because look at the stretch that you're in, right? So that could be one where it's like you drop that one, and depending on how they have fared before and after, that could be one of the moments where things get called into question. Oh, ultimately, I don't think it's going to sink the ship, but I think that I could totally see some moments, November, early December, where people are like, oh, is the floor about to fall out for Tampa? But then they'll finish strong again because, yeah, Jets, 17, come on.
Yeah, and they have two of their harder games on the road. I mean, I think the Saints are still going to be competitive, so having them on the at home will help, and then having the Bills at home will help, and then, of course, the two Panthers games and the Jets, which very favorable. And I'm just not seeing very many losses on the schedule.
No, like they have a really easy.
I was going to say Packers. They have their rough stretch is kind of midseason with Washington, Arizona, Kansas City, Seattle, Minnesota, and Rams. That's what they've got heading. They're six right before the bye. So they could be kind of the reverse where they kind of, you know, hit a string of losses midseason that closes the gap with them in Minnesota. And then they have the potential to kind of, you know, with Chicago, Minnesota, Detroit as three of their final five, that could be their, you know, moment to run away with things.
No, 100%. I agree with you both, but, anyway, gentlemen, is there any other points or statements or takes you guys want to make before we wrap up this NFC preview show?
Jameis Winston, comeback player of the year.
Rams, Super Bowl champions.
You know what? I like that. My comeback player of the year, though, Matt, is actually Saquon Barkley.
Oh, man. That's definitely one there for you. But
hell yeah.
That's fine.
That's going to be my bold take, giving Jameis Winston comeback player of the year.
Yeah, but you know what? I can see it happening too, but at the same time too, I feel like if Saquon comes back and just rushes for, if he can get to like at least 1,500 yards and is the reason why the Giants are either a fringe playoff team or make the wild card or even win the division, you can't argue against it. But at the same time too, you know what? If Jameis comes in and plays like he did in 2019, just takes the interceptions down by like 15 goes, like, say if he goes 30 and 15 on the year, that's a successful season for him in my books.
Yeah, and I've heard some people say this, and just as kind of like a closing statement on the Saints, Drew Brees, his last 2 years, when he's kind of on and off with injuries, you could make the statement that Jameis Winston's, I mean, it might be blasphemous to hear from some people, but you can make a statement that Jameis Winston could be better than that, definitely, because those are definitely some of Drew Brees' worst career years as a Saint. And, I mean, the possibility of the deep ball being unlocked in this offense again has a lot of possibilities. It's going to be definitely interesting because I've been kind of up and down on them as the offseason's progressed, and to a point where I kind of hit my – I was almost at the floor because a couple weeks ago I probably would have had them at 8-7 wins, but I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic as the season's starting after seeing some of the preseason games. But, yeah, that's kind of my closing statements.
No, without a doubt. Well, anyway, gentlemen, I'm very glad that both of you were able to join me today, especially – I hope that this NFC preview show has been trust funded approved. But you know what? Like I said, I gotta pay the bank back. Otherwise, Jared's goons are going to come after me and kill me.
That's right. We even got you a low APR on the loan you had to take out to get me on the show. So don't make my boys come after you, because it seems like, you know, every few weeks the trust fund is adding more assets. So I would watch myself.
As long as YWC football talk is one, that's all I care about.
That's it.
Anyway, folks. Like I said, we're less than 72 hours now till kickoff of the NFL season. I hope you enjoy the games. I'll be back Wednesday night with Keegan Stiefel of Pat's Pulpit to get you guys ready and primed for week one. But anyway, big thanks once again to Matt Datsu, Matt Beast 1419, and of course, the trust fund benefactor himself, Jared Silberkleit, for joining me on today's NFC preview show. Folks, we're so much closer to the start of football season. Have a good night. And you know what? Can you smell that? That's football in the air. Have a good night, everybody.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.